Happy Friday out there. May 24, 2024 is the date. It is time for the Gabe Kuhn Show. I know most of y'all, you may be in the car going elsewhere for the Memorial Day weekend. I understand that your Memorial Day weekend may have started early, but still, we got you for 3 hours. I'm Gabe Kuhn on X at G_Kuhn71, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman. I'm alongside producer Brad Carson. On X at Brad Carson. Brad, any big plans for the weekend?
So it is, of course, graduation weekend for people of my age, for their kids. And so I want to give a shout out to Andrew Miller, who will be going to his graduation party tomorrow in Cordova. So I've got that plan. I'm going to be with some in-laws in Mississippi. And we will be remembering our fallen heroes on Monday.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
I will be mowing the lawn in their honor.
You're going to have to deal with a graduation soon, too. Huh?
2 years.
Good God.
We are two.
Time flies?
Two.
Does time fly?
Flies very fast, my friend. I remember being footloose and fancy free and your age and a newlywed. That was a good time.
I hear you.
Enjoy the hell out of it, Gabe. Grab a cold one and celebrate your youth.
I have zero plans. That's always, those are always the best plans.
Enjoyed listening to Jeff yesterday. I was on the show. Jeff Calkins joins you every Tuesday and Thursday here in the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 at 5 o'clock. And Jeff said something to you that struck me. He's talking about all the young kids, you know, because like Jeffrey's got a baby and Mark's got three babies, basically. John's got two. You're a newlywed, all these young people. And he goes, but Brad, you're getting up there. It's like, holy crap, bro. Like,
well, I'll say this, you know, off the air, you do call yourself old all the time.
Well, I did that for so long in radio because you can only desire in our career field to grow old in this career field. Because if you don't, you're not. And so somebody else pointed that out to me. They're like, you really talk about being old a lot. And it's because in my 20s, I only could have hoped to be on a radio station like 92.9 for, I mean, now this station's been going on.
Right.
I mean, I'm not even making this up. Usually these stations don't last. They just don't. I mean, I'm just being honest with you. Like, I've been on some clunkers.
Yeah.
I've been doing radio for 30 years. When we started this in 2008, Gabe, like, I was just like, man, I hope we can get in like the top five, maybe.
Sure.
And that I'll be doing this when my kids graduate from high school. So, no, but what you tell people is you're like, man, you know, I'm getting up there. I've been doing radio for 10 years, been doing radio for 5 years. And now here I am 30 years into this career. And it's like, man, I could have only hoped that.
You know, I can give you a pass for, you know, calling yourself old all the time, whatever.
Yeah.
What my biggest pet peeve, though, I talk about it all the time.
Sure.
I hate when people my age try to do that. They get to age 30 and they're like, yeah. We're getting old. And it's like, getting, but no, you're not.
John Martin can be guilty of that at times, but I told him, I said, man, you got two little ones. And this is going to sound very melancholy, but you know, people say this all the time, but this is why you do have to live in the present. You have to, like, soak it up, which was why it was so nice to be at your wedding earlier this year and to celebrate you. And, by God, has it been 6 months?
Well, that was last year, actually, technically.
Has it been 6 months, 8 months? How long y'all been married now?
September 30th was the date. So,
and you're still married. That's good.
Yeah.
So it's working out pretty well.
Yeah.
By the way, we have 3 hours of talk here on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Brought to you by 92.9 FM ESPN.
It's going to be brought. Are we bringing it to you?
And yours truly.
And yours truly. Yours I almost truly. Got the script here.
Yes, sir.
Glad to
you
be
know
here with
the
you,
script,
Gabe.
Brother.
My God, it's good to be with you on this Friday.
We have plenty to get to on this Friday.
Plenty.
As well. Celtics are up 2-0 in the Eastern Conference
Finals.
And they absolutely whooped up last night. I mean, they got after the Pacers.
It's over.
They saved. I think it's over. If Tyrese Halliburton can't go, and we'll talk about that, it's definitely over. But it sort of felt like the Celtics saved their previous two Game 2 performances for Game 1, and then their Game 1 performances for Game 2.
Right.
They were very good last night. They were you know, executing at a high level, whereas in Game 1, they just made mistake after mistake and barely got away with one. And I do agree with a lot of people that say, I don't even know if the Celtics won that game or the Pacers lost, but regardless, it goes in the win column for the Celtics, and they're up 2-0, and it just does not feel like the Pacers have any leg to stand on in this series. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about Western Conference Finals Game 2. Mavs up 1-0.
Yep.
I think most people are surprised. Timberwolves need to rebut tonight. They need to rebut. You don't want to lose two games on your home floor, and then have to transition to Dallas, where the Mavs have actually played really well in these playoffs. Also, House versus NCAA. We talked about it a little bit yesterday. I was ahead of the
discussion. You were way out in front on this one.
But all the five Power Five conferences, and I know the Pac-12 is not really a Power Five conference, but they had to sign off on this settlement with the House versus NCAA case. But looks like all of the six different, you know, entities that needed to approve this settlement have approved it.
Who is the sixth one outside of the Power Five?
The NCAA board.
Oh,
NCAA
okay.
board
I see.
Had to approve it as well. I'll tell you where those funds are coming from. And I know that the tendency as a consumer is to try to ignore all the money moving, settlement, litigation stuff. But this one, I'm telling you, you can't ignore. It's going to change the way we view college athletics even further. It's going to morph away from even where we're at right this second. And we know the complete turnaround and differences that we've gone through in just a five-year period.
Mm-hmm.
The next 5 years, next 10 years, good God. I'm not even going to try to project what this thing is.
I'm interested in your take on Jeff's column, by the way. The idea that this screws Memphis, essentially.
It does.
Yeah, thank you.
But we'll talk about that. Now, as far as guests are concerned, bottom of this hour, I'm very pleased to be joined. Former Tiger, football player, played some tight end there. But he is the head of Memphis Little League. And I love Memphis Little League. I volunteered over there a couple times.
Good for you.
But Kerry Cobb will join the program. He's got a new alliance that he wants to talk about with Memphis Little League where they're going to help pay for some of the uniforms and everything else. But I just love his mission, man.
Mm-hmm.
He provides a safe space and baseball to a lot of kids in the inner city of Memphis that wouldn't normally have that opportunity. And I think he needs to be praised, and we'll talk to him about what's up and coming for Memphis Little League going into, you know, the back half of his season. David Cobb will join at 5 o'clock, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I guess, from CBS Sports, college football, college basketball. We'll talk about House versus NCAA. He has a pretty cool story up at CBSSports.com that we're going to talk through. Winners and losers of the House versus NCAA $2.8 billion settlement. And I think it's worth a read because it really does lay out a lot of different things that you may not have thought about previously. So we'll talk to David at 5. Then 6 o'clock, Keith Smith will join to talk some NBA playoffs, front office show, and Spot Track is where you can find him. And then the Blitz will be at 6:30. We have some TNT sports programming to talk about since they're likely going to lose the NBA. And then I know you talked about this earlier, Brad, but Bronny James is the leading bet getter for number one overall to the Hawks.
I saw it, yeah.
People are so dumb. Why are we so devolved to where we can't use critical thinking? I know that they're maybe using that as like a lottery ticket because he's plus 20,000, but there is no world where he should be the leading bet getter for number one overall.
You know, in thinking about it, as you were talking, and we'll talk more about this in the Blitz coming up in the 6 o'clock hour, I think it tells you how little people value $10. That's what it boils down to. Like, $10 is the new $1.
Yeah.
And so people, it tells you the value of what 10, because that's probably what. What do you think people are putting on this? They can't be putting real money on
this. There's no sharps.
If they are.
The sharps aren't putting it there.
No.
Tell you that. You don't have any $10,000 bets on Bronny James.
But the amount of people that are doing it is staggering.
It's gross. It's disgusting, quite frankly. I want to know how much of the money, though, because it's probably, I bet Alex Saar probably has way more money put away.
Yeah, it won his odds.
But the amount of bets are all on Bronny, right?
Well, and this came into play, by the way, 2 years ago when Paolo Banchero was the number one overall pick. You might recall, like, the gambling market and these lines was all over the place, especially because of Woj's tweet, which was wrong, mind you.
Well, was it the Scoot Henderson thing, too, last year?
I mean, it's gotten dicier in this market.
There was some ridiculous claims from Sham saying he was in play at number one to the Spurs.
Like, what are we doing?
And he's got a damn FanDuel show.
And this is why these agent relationships with reporters, we should all be, what you're reading, questioning what the hell is going on
a little bit. But like, ESPN has their own betting arm.
Yes.
FanDuel, of course, has their, they are a service, and I love my relationship with them. But at the same time, they have shows and programming and Chandler Parsons and Shams Charania doing things for them that ultimately shifts odds in certain situations. It's just strange to me.
It is strange.
It's a tough relationship that we have to live with in this day and age.
They'll take your money on the Bronny bet, though, mind you.
I don't think they're mad about that.
No.
That is That is a liability that they will take.
They will take that.
They'll go ahead and
better
take
than
that
fade Brad, even.
Like, yes,
yeah, if my limits are 50,000, you can imagine what the limit is for this
no,
one.
No, I wouldn't be surprised, Brad, if you had $5.
No, I don't.
Wouldn't be surprised.
Even Brad Carson isn't doing that.
Yeah, I hear you.
Although maybe we'll make a wager later on.
Now, this. Brad Carson was right last night on
his,
maybe not the Jason Tatum over, but you were right on the Celtics.
I hit on the Tatum, no, but like, I'm going to be riding with the Mavericks and the Celtics, bottom line, that's where I'm at.
But Celtics got over top, they covered that line, -8.5, -9, wherever you got it, 126-110, they go up 2-0, and really what it came down to is that first half to me. I thought the Celtics just sort of imposed their will, a lot of offensive boards. There was a point in that first quarter, going into the second quarter, where the Celtics had more offensive boards than the Pacers had rebounds in general. So the Pacers cut into that, and they really stuck around. I don't think 126-110 it like totally tells the story of this game. The Pacers really fought, but they just didn't have enough by the end of this whole thing. The Pacers scoring drought from the first quarter into the second, though, just showed me that the Celtics were on. They were clicking on both ends. The Pacers didn't score for the first 5 minutes of the second. That led to a 20-0 Celtics run. And I think one of the biggest reasons that was the case is Jaylen Brown was cooking last night. Jaylen Brown was the certified number one for the Celtics. It wasn't Jason Tatum last night. 24 points in the first half. He finished with 40. 14 for 27 from the field. 4 for 10 from 3. He kept his turnovers at a low. And we know we always talk about him going to his left hand and how much of a struggle that is for him. He was great. He was great last night. I truly think this series is over. I thought it was over before it started, quite frankly, because I just don't think the Pacers have the ability to really get over top of the Celtics in a 7-game series, no matter which way is shaken. I think having a guy, you know, like Benedict Mathurin, who had the season-ending injury, he would have helped a lot. They could have stole a game. But the Celtics seem to be on their way, in my opinion, to either a sweep or a gentleman's sweep. It doesn't seem like the Pacers have much to say about this series.
No, the interesting thing is the play of Jaylen Brown that you brought up, because they're so friggin' deep. I mean, even it's sort of like it's like a pitching lineup when they switch out a bad pitcher and they're like, let's put in a good one. It's like they can alternate between Brown and Tatum.
It's a different type of deep. Like when you think of deep, usually you think deep into the bench. I don't think they have a bunch of bench players. Peyton Pritchard was great last night, but, I mean, we're talking about right now with Kristaps Porzingis still hurt and no real timeline. You're talking about Luke Kornet, Sam Hauser, and Peyton Pritchard. That's not a strong bench that would be the normal definition of deep.
Well,
but when we talk about their skill set and the guys they can keep on the floor and the amount of scoring and defense they have, they're deep in that regard.
I'll take it a step further. They're deep in the regard that they can be without Kristaps Porzingis and be the presumed favorite to win the NBA title, even if he doesn't play in the title round.
And I think Kristaps Porzingis, when he comes back, ties that whole thing together. Good rim protection, stretches out the floor.
Well, especially with these long teams from the West, because both of them are long. Timberwolves are deep with the big guys, and same Mavericks are proving this out, too.
Yeah, I will say, I think the Timberwolves would be the toughest matchup for the Celtics getting through, just because they do
the bigs.
The bigs definitely concern me.
Yeah, and the shooting, but yeah, I agree with that.
Because Luke Kornet.
Yep.
If he ever hit the floor, would get abused by those centers for the
I actually think that you're exactly right. But, you know, the Mavericks, the way that their two big players are playing, who knows? But the Celtics series is, I think I'm with you on
it
being over.
Here's the other thing.
Yeah.
Tyrese Halliburton has a hamstring issue.
Yeah, that's not
Shams Charania was reporting on it. He had to leave the game. He's struggling with it right now. And obviously they're going to have a couple days off, and they'll play again, and they'll be in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And I would imagine it's Eastern Conference Finals. If you're the Pacers, you have to question if you'll ever get back here. I would imagine he's going to do everything he can to give it a go. But you should remember, in January, he missed 10 games with this same hamstring issue, his right hamstring. And he also has a back issue that's been hindering him the back part of this season. I think this series is over, like I said. But if Tyrese Halliburton is out, it is over with. It's going to be a sweep. There's no chance that the Pacers have enough without Tyrese Halliburton on ball to even bother the Celtics defensively.
They've got no chance. I mean, Halliburton is their best ticket. And
And I thought Pascal Siakam was good last night, but what's the likelihood of him really coming back and you know, putting that out there every night? He was 13 for 17 from the field, 2 for 2 from 3, 28 points, and he still lost by 16.
Well, you brought up the role players on this game. I mean, that might be one advantage when they switch out some of these guys, but McConnell's been okay. But the Pacers, to me, blew their best chance in game one, and that's on the coach, you know?
Well, yeah, he could have called a timeout there on the inbounds play, and then
I mean, you had the game.
Move the ball up into the front court. Yeah. Give yourself some time.
You're up three.
Draw up a play too to get the ball.
You're up three with 8 seconds.
Yes, all
like,
you have to have
the win percentage was like 95%.
100%. And honestly, Rick Carlisle took it right on the chin in that. Like he said, I screwed this up.
I was surprised to hear him say that. But if you're a player and you hear the coach say that, you're like, man, we might have just lost.
Yeah,
I probably wouldn't have said that if I were Rick Carlisle after game one.
Yeah. Yeah, but 2-0 transitioning to Indiana, Tyrese Halliburton's hamstring in question.
They're screwed.
It is very dark right now for the Indiana
Pacers.
The
interesting thing is this game, you know, is the line movement, because I had to do a pick earlier, as we well are aware that we're doing Brad's Fade Brad here, and that is where I make a pick and the listeners pick the opposite because I'm really bad at gambling. And the line on this thing started today at like -7 at most books. But if Halliburton's not playing, even if this game is in Indy, I got to think this is a double-digit spread.
Yeah, 100%.
Right?
It'll be up
like
above 10.
If you're
10 and a half, something like that.
In other words, if you're legitimately gambling on the Boston Celtics game, do not bet yet. Like, wait till tip to see what's going on with this thing.
The only thing that is a little bit interesting about the Celtics, but it's not interesting enough for me to change my thoughts on the series,
yeah,
is Luke Kornet's doubtful. Kristaps is going to stay out. So they're going to be really thin,
yeah,
with bigs. They've put in O'Shea Brissett, who's a small forward, to sort of take those big minutes. Xavier Tillman, I'm curious why he's not getting run at this particular moment. That sort of blows
maybe our
me
front
away.
Office guy can help us at six on
yeah.
that one. I've been curious, and I think this is why I was worried about the Grizzlies. It's like, man, he played real minutes for the Grizzlies in the playoffs.
But
and
he
now
was
he
good. He was good, though.
He was good
playoff minutes.
But he had to be because of you were down Steven Adams.
Steven Adams couldn't play in that
he
series
was out.
Against Timberwolves.
But, I mean, he's not even seeing the floor for Boston.
Yeah, and I thought that he'd get a little bit more run after they traded for him at the
too.
Trade deadline.
Yeah, I thought they did that
they
on purpose.
They needed more bodies, and I figured, okay, I guess Luke Kornet's the bigger guy.
Right.
But Xavier Tillman's a more skilled guy.
Yep.
He can switch better on the perimeter. But he's 6'8". He's just the height probably
undersized,
is part of the reason that he's not hitting
Maybe.
The floor. But we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. Now, Timberwolves versus Mavs. You mentioned a 6-7 point line coming up Saturday. This is a 6-point line. Timberwolves, 6-point favorites. They have to get this win tonight. And I can tell you one key to the game. Here's my one key. Don't get beat 62-38 in the paint. And you might have a chance to go win a ball game. You only lost by three, and you allowed that to happen to you. Daniel Gafford, Derek Lively showed up. Your centers couldn't bring it back at them, couldn't bring the fight back. Anthony Edwards didn't have a good showing offensively, only 19 points, wasn't very efficient, took 12 of his 16 shots from the three-point line. He needs to attack a little bit more. But I can tell you right now, don't get beat 62-38 in the paint, and you're going to have a chance to win this game tonight.
Gafford and those dudes are good. Like, that's the thing. And there are so many things, I think, that changed once people actually got to see the Dallas Mavericks play because they haven't been paying attention to them. That's my opinion. I mean, because everybody was watching Denver, assuming Denver was going to win the West. But if you look at, like, Dallas, look at who they're playing. Like, Lively is good. Gafford is good. They've got two bigs that they can throw down on the low post. The other thing, P.J. Washington. And if you look at how Derek Jones is playing as a role player, and then the two stars are able to play together.
Yes.
Like two nights ago, 30 and 33.
And it was 63 points. But I was impressed. I've been impressed with Kyrie these playoffs because
me too.
Even without the scoring, the defense
he doesn't
he's
have
played,
to. He doesn't have to.
The way he's taken care of the ball, the way he's gotten his teammates involved, it's been like he is. This is a chance for him, especially if they get through the NBA Finals. This is a chance for him to sort of stamp his legacy as a guy who can play alongside stars in the best possible ways. Did it with LeBron. He's doing it with Luka for the most part, even though the back half of last season when they traded for him, it looked bleak. It looked bad.
He has totally flipped my perception of Kyrie Irving. And as long as he's not talking about planets, like Kyrie Irving is cool now with me because like he can score 9 points and affect a game.
Well, but here's the thing. It was never in question. Like, all the discussion around Kyrie Irving, it's never in question. He's probably one of the best pure hoopers in the entire NBA. You know that.
Yeah, like I agree with that.
He can finish at
People
the rim.
People talk about him as one of the best players
shoot,
in the world.
But he's just, it's his character. He's a little weird
He's
at
a
times.
Strange cat. But and he's also stayed away from that stuff. Like, when you hear him talk right now, like, it's he's talking about Luka and their relationship.
It's
everything
focus.
We wanted it to be. And I'm sure, like, Dallas, I don't know what they did, if they gave him a tranquilizer, or if, like, Jason Kidd is, like, a coaching savant. Like, what did they
do? Well, maybe Kyrie just learned along the way, hey, I want to cool out
a little bit.
Well, I don't want to continually be in the public light in a negative way.
It's weird, though, how fast he switched to this.
Right.
Because, like, I did not see this coming.
Right. I thought he'd be a problem.
I thought he'd be a weirdo.
He's not really a weirdo. But I will say, like, the bigs in this series, I thought that the Timberwolves would be able to get over top, especially in game one. That's not what happened. Daniel Gafford, Derek Lively are great.
They're hovering around the perimeter,
but
though.
Here's the thing. It's a contrasting style.
Yes.
For the bigs. You have the big hulking bigs on one side, Karl Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert and Naz Reid on that Timberwolves side.
Yep.
But you have these big, movable, rim-running bigs on the other side that can rebound at a high level, that'll do the dirty work.
Yeah.
And I think it's sort of equaling out to, hey, the Mavs really have a shot to compete in that realm with them. And you definitely saw it in game one. Now, on to the coaching carousel.
Oh, yeah, with the Bickerstaff stuff?
Bickerstaff thing, I found it a little interesting. Kobe Altman, the GM for the Cavs. Of course, J.B. Bickerstaff was fired yesterday after 5 years with the Cavs, gets them to the second round, loses to the Celtics, no Donovan Mitchell. He never had a chance, but I guess he lost his way with the locker room, and that's why they're making that decision. Kobe Altman, their GM, came out today and just said, we need a new approach. And I think that is the biggest cop-out I've ever heard in my life. I just don't, like, of course you need a new approach, sure, whatever, but I think the approach would be to restructure your roster, right? You had this roster with two separate power struggles going on at the same time. Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland fighting for the ball in the touches and the shots in the backcourt. Then you had Evan Mobley and Jared Allen trying to figure out how to play next to each other because they occupy similar spaces on the floor. I just think when you talk about a new approach, you need to find a new approach with how you're building the team, not necessarily J.B. Bickerstaff.
Okay, if you're making an argument for the firing, you might look at what the Mavericks are doing, okay? Because they had to figure out what they were doing with the two guards. One of them is basically Luka's a guard because he floats around the perimeter all over the place. So if you're trying to figure out what you're going to do with the two guards, because one of them is going to go.
You trade Darius Garland.
So Garland's going to go and Mitchell's going to be there. But I would argue, hear me out on this, Gabe. You probably do need both of them if you're going to do this again.
No. I don't know if I think that power struggle is too much. And they're a small backcourt.
Remember health.
They're a small backcourt.
Think about this for a second. Think about health, too. For example, this series, they wouldn't have been where they were because Mitchell was out.
Sure, but they were never going to beat the Celtics. Never.
They were close.
They were not going to beat the Celtics. They weren't going to do it. I'm sorry.
Better than the Pacers.
And obviously, I know it's a what if, but the Celtics got through and ended up winning anyway. But I think when you look at Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell next to each other, you just have this. You have two guys, relatively smallish backcourt. We saw it with the Portland Trailblazers for years. You can have a really talented backcourt. C.J. McCollum and Damian Lillard.
I remember that.
Were as talented a backcourt as you had in the NBA.
But
you didn't have the defensive prowess to go with it. And then you also, who's getting the ball? Who's got the ball in their hands all the time? I think what you should do, trade Darius Garland, get a fair amount of compensation back because people will pay high for him because he can help a lot of teams. The Spurs, the Lakers, there's a lot of teams looking for a point guard like Darius Garland right now. You trade him, get some assets back, see what you can do with Jared Allen and his contract. Grizzlies, maybe give a look at that. And then you try to get some assets back, get some draft picks, trades.
Here's my guess.
Just some things within the margins. If you have Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley, you're starting with a good little core there. Add some pieces around it using the assets you get back in trades, and I think you can rebuild that roster to be more competitive in the East.
If you don't have the talent you have next year as the Cavaliers, you aren't going to the quarterfinals again, I promise you, because the Portland Trailblazers.
But you can rebuild that roster.
And what have we seen
from these last four teams, Brad? You can make moves around the edge. You're never as far away as you think.
If you've got the right pieces,
which I think Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley, fair base.
Yeah.
Right? You can build around those guys, and you're never as far away as you think. The Mavericks had to get rid of Grant Williams, bring in P.J. Washington, Daniel Gafford. Now they're in the Western Conference Finals. Timberwolves traded for Rudy Gobert. We were questioning it at first, but it worked out. On the back end, You look at the Pacers. The Pacers had to trade Bruce Brown. They went and got Pascal Siakam. They're now in the Eastern Conference Finals. Celtics, Jrue Holiday, Kristaps.
But you've got to hit on it.
And they were the best team in the NBA.
I agree with you. But you got to hit perfectly on the trade.
Sure.
Because the Grizzlies have not done it yet. And we've seen other franchises mess this up.
Sure, but it's insanity to just run back what they had with a team like the Celtics in your conference when you realize that this roster we have has no chance of getting over top of them.
The Boston Celtics, though, have done a better job than everybody, and that's why they're probably going to win the title.
That's why Brad Stevens is executive of the year, too.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And that's actually who you need to get right, which is why Altman, that's why I probably wouldn't have fired Bickerstaff, you know? Yeah. And I probably would try to just work on the edges a little bit, but I mean now they're doubling down on doing both.
All right, now speaking of staying on the coaching carousel, Lakers, have you seen this? You seen this stuff? Woj talked about it last night. There was some sound that I was thinking about playing. It's all good though. I'll tell you what he said. JJ Redick.
Oh, I can get this.
I find that pretty insane, Brad.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to pull it up. I just find it wild that you have a guy like Sam Cassell out there, mm-hmm. James Borrego, Kenny Atkinson, guys that have done this before, and you're just going to lean into this J.J. Redick thing, potentially. You're going to lean directly into that, a guy who's never coached at any level, and he's going to skip the line. Now, again, I don't think J.J. Redick is going to be a bad coach. I think he has a lot of basketball knowledge. I think he can be good. But to take over the Lakers in their current form as a first-time head coach seems like a pretty dumb thing to do at this current moment.
I mean, you might as well give him a flyer and let him try it out.
I tried
everybody else out.
And this is the other thing that I don't know if a lot of people are talking about. Do we like this for J.J. Redick?
Now, Jason mentioned that. He's like, because you're getting a job that's probably going to be a turnaround job.
You're getting a job with... aging superstars.
Yeah.
The roster's got to get filled out by Rob Pelinka, and we know that LeBron usually has a say in all that stuff.
And would you bet on it working?
No. No. Frank Vogel won a championship and then was fired the next year.
Isn't that crazy?
Darvin Ham had 2 years to get it going, and it wasn't necessary. I didn't like Darvin Ham as a coach. I thought he was a cardboard cutout and didn't really do any coaching in-game.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't think the reason that the Lakers fell short was Darvin Ham. I think it's their roster.
I agree.
You have to build around LeBron and AD. They haven't done that in a very meaningful way. And they don't have a point guard that sort of settles everything down. Darius Garland would be an interesting piece if they could find a way to go trade for him. But I don't know if I like this for J.J. Redick. This feels like, hey, you get 2-3 years to go get us into the Western Conference Finals or a championship, or you're done.
If I'm J.J., I'd probably take that Cavs job before I take the Lakers job.
He's not even running for that. Right now, from what I understand.
He should be.
It's James Borrego, Sam Cassell.
J.J. should be in the running.
Kenny Atkinson, too.
If I were him, that's the job I would want.
Yes.
He may not be in the running for it. I'm just telling you out of
just
the jobs.
Just because they'd be a little bit more patient with you.
Yeah, give you an opportunity there.
But he's not in the running for any other jobs, Brad. I mean, he was in the running for the Hornets job, but Charles Lee got that job.
It could change.
I guess so. But it feels like the Lakers are the only place he could land this offseason if he wants to take a job.
Yep.
But it's always been obvious he wanted to be an NBA head coach, right? There's never been any doubt in my mind that he was going to get to this point.
No, I think that's right. The interesting point I made to Jason on J.J. Redick is that, and I made the comparison to Penny.
Okay. Let's
follow me here.
Okay, I'll try to follow.
Would Penny have been better off not being a college coach that hasn't made the tournament in the last year and then has not done what we thought he would do instead of going the route of J.J. Redick to get to that NBA job? In other words,
JJ
has not been a college coach.
Right.
So he's not had the opportunity to screw up a college, and he can take a pro job.
So you're saying if Penny Hardaway would to do it over and he went, because he wants to go to the NBA at some point, and
he wants to do what J.J. Redick is on the precipice of doing.
But he didn't do the media thing previously.
That's right.
And that's why J.J. Redick has been so
upfront. I'm not suggesting that Penny had to do the media route. I'm suggesting once you put a resume out there and you prove yourself to be something, that sticks to you versus J.J.
Yes.
has nothing that's sticking to him.
Yes.
Like, J.J. has not put anything on paper as a coach.
He just looks like one of the smartest analysts on ESPN.
That's right.
Now.
He gets
to go
on TV and look super smart. Okay, so my point is, J.J.'s really smart by not putting anything on paper in terms of his coaching resume.
Yeah. Obviously, not all situations and characters and personalities are built the same. I think Penny would be fine in a media realm, though.
But I'm not saying he had to do that.
He had to do that. But
I actually
think... But I get your point. former star in the NBA, retires, stays in the public light, makes it very clear, hey, I would like to be a player personnel guy, yes, or a coach. You get that job without really having to.
You don't have
to. You can skip steps.
Yes.
You can skip steps because you're in the public eye
consistently.
Because
you haven't shown yourself to be something other than what we think you are.
Right. I get what you mean.
But Jason Smith made a counterpoint to it that I thought was exactly right. He said, look at what Patrick Ewing had to do to become a coach. He was trying to be an NBA coach. He sat on a bench forever, and he never got an opportunity to be a head coach in the NBA. So he went to Georgetown. And what happened at Georgetown?
Dad.
Didn't go so well.
Yes.
So that's He brought up the point that you have to go, you know, he had to go through those steps, and that could have been the same way that Penny was if he was sitting on an NBA bench even.
Yeah, there's very few guys that get to skip the line the way J.J. Redick's fixing
it. It's almost unfair a little bit, is it not?
Yeah. I mean, Steve Nash did the same thing. I mean,
Steve Kerr was a GM.
Steve Kerr
was an executive.
He was on a bench too with Greg Popovich.
Okay, so
for a little bit.
So like
he paid a few
Kerr
dues.
Might have put in a few more then.
Yes,
and he was an executive. He was actually a GM before a coach.
But your point is JJ has no stink on him.
No,
zero stink.
He has had an opportunity.
So this is why the Lakers look at him and say, okay, why not?
He sounds super smart. Look at him. He had a great NBA career.
He's got a good relationship with LeBron. And all
we
need a coach to do when they come in here, yeah, we can have some on-court coaching, but at the
yes.
same time, you just have to have a good partnership with that guy.
I just am fascinated how he gets to skip these steps, and yet a player development guy like Penny, who says he wants to be an NBA coach, it's like, you know, you got a little something on you because you put something on paper.
Yep, for sure. Now, let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. And when we come back, we're going to switch gears completely. We have the House versus NCAA case being settled. There's some things that we need to talk through. Where does this leave Memphis? Where does this leave the Group of Five? Revenue sharing, what's that going to look like? That's all next. So we have hit a snag, a revolutionary day in the world of college athletics. We have a House versus NCAA case that's been going on for a while now with some good lawyers. They're the biggest winners in this whole thing, by the way. Billable hours, and they're going to get a lot of this $2.8 billion settlement. But there's $2.8 billion out there, and we're agreeing to terms where revenue sharing is going to be a part of college athletics going forward, at least for the Power Four. $20 million will be set aside for athletic departments in the Power Four to give to their athletes, depending on the amount of revenue they bring in. Now, I think there's a clear winner and clear loser. I'll get to that in a second. I found it interesting first where this money's coming from. It's coming from schools. It's coming from schools, this $2.8 billion. And it's going to be deducted from their TV revenue, that whole thing. 40% is going to come from the Power Five, including the Pac-12. And then 60% comes from everybody all the way down through the FCS level, everybody in Division One. Now, what strikes me about that is, you know, the Big East and the American Athletic Conference, they're sitting there, they say, okay, well, the Big 12, the Power Five got to agree on this, and the NCAA board. But why didn't even have a seat at the table, and you're telling me I have to pay out of my pocket to go for 60% of this $2.8 billion settlement? I find that strange. The Big East is sitting there like, dude, we don't even play football, for God's sakes. Like, we are a strict basketball conference, and you're telling us that we have to go out of our way to pay. And this includes the Southland and all these FCS, the Missouri Valley Conference. All these FCS conferences have to go ahead and pay as well. I just found that on the surface of it very strange. Now, as far as one clear winner, one clear loser, I think the winner in this entire thing is the players ultimately, in all sports. With the revenue that's going to be shared with them, they can get paid directly from the school, and they'll still have NIL collectives that they could take advantage of, name, image, and likeness deals, that type of thing. So they're going to get the money that they have deserved for a long time. When you generate that revenue, when you're in a revenue-generating sport, and you're a player, and you're most of the reason that they're able to fill out stadiums and sell the program, you should be entitled to some of that money. So I think the players, first of all, are the biggest winner. Now, biggest loser in this whole thing is the competitive balance of sports, college athletics in general. Where does this leave a school like Memphis? Where does this leave the rest of the schools outside of the Power Four now? In a bad spot, I'll tell you that right now. Because the reason that the Power Four are able to share revenue, are going to be able to share revenue with their players, is they have enough money on the TV front to be able to carve out a certain amount of money to give them. In the American Athletic Conference, in the Sun Belt, all these other conferences, they don't have that luxury. And if you're not producing enough revenue, you're then not going to be able to share it with your players. And if you do share some of that revenue with your players, what is the deficit going to look like for your entire athletic department? It completely kills a lot of these group of five schools. And I think we're headed, one, to the NCAA not regulating much, and we're heading to a complete caste system, a hierarchy, where these group of five schools, the FCS schools, everybody's going to be left behind for 80 schools in general, especially on the football front. It's a frustrating reality, but it's the reality we're being faced with.
So why do we want to be part of the NCAA?
I don't know. It's just structure at this point. That's it. But they're not really, they don't have a lot of structure right now. They're behind they're behind on every real
change.
You're
not in the Power Five, especially.
Yes, but I thought Jeff wrote a really good column for the Daily Memphian today about it.
Yeah, go there.
University of Memphis is going to be left behind.
Yeah.
That's unless there's some ACC gets, you know,
because this money goes to the athletes in the Power Five on top of their NIL, right?
The University of Memphis, when it comes to competing for players, is not going to be able to be on that same. I know they've done a really good job with NIL. $7.5 million a year from FedEx and from donors is what they're putting forward. And you're seeing that work right now. But going into the future, you're going to have $7 million NIL funds at other schools in the Power Four on top of the revenue that's being shared with the players already.
Right.
It's going to be hard to keep up there. And then I just don't know if they are in a spot as an athletic department to actually share the revenue with their players and not operate at an insane deficit, have to cut sports, do that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And then also, how about the Title IX implications here? When you're sharing revenue, I would assume the way that this is going to be structured, you're sharing it with the entire athletic department. But we know that there are certain players and certain sports that generate more revenue than others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, women's golf does not generate what football does.
Right.
But it's going to be shared across the board. How is that going to work?
You're probably going to shed some programs,
now,
both men's and women's.
In the end of the day, I look at this whole thing and I say, yes, we're taking a revolutionary step, a step that I think was necessary a long time ago. But in the end of the day, you're leaving a lot more questions on the table than answers.
Right. Yeah.
And I have no idea where we go from here. And I'm done, quite frankly. Brad, I talked to Jonah Dillon about this yesterday from the Commercial Appeal. I'm done projecting where this thing is.
Right, I think that's a good idea.
Because it's impossible to know.
You can't. We have no idea.
It's ridiculous. And like I related it to, you know, realignment yesterday. Mm-hmm. I'm done trying to project that. I'm done trying to project what the employer-employee relationship looks like, if they're going to get an antitrust exemption. We're just all over the place right now. And it's really hard to follow.
You were not of the opinion that a Memphis should figure out how to band together with the P6 type, the outsiders, and do their own thing.
I would not prefer that.
Yes.
But when you lack choices,
that's the best of the worst choices, possibly.
Yeah. When you lack choices and opportunities, you have to do what's in front of you. The best thing for Memphis would be somehow find yourself into this power structure.
Of course.
And I think they're well-positioned, but how well-positioned are they? They've been skipped over a million different times.
You get in a $250 million stadium. I mean, you're upgrading everything. You're spending a lot of money to get there.
Your NIL's there. You have good donors, corporate donors. You're trying your best, but with the University of Memphis, there's always been that extra step.
Yep.
I keep talking about it. They get the NIL.
The bar changes.
They get that NIL money. You're super happy about it. Oh, here's revenue sharing.
Yeah, it sucks. It totally sucks.
There's always this step that seems insurmountable.
Well, even going back to about a decade ago when the Big East thing happened with basketball, we're all sitting here stoked and celebrating. We were celebrating on the air, Gabe.
Yep.
You were probably in school at that time.
Mm-hmm. That was
right before?
Right.
Or after?
I was, my first year was the Big East.
So the Big East thing, like on the radio, we were pumped. They had the skyboard in New York City on Times Square, and everybody's retweeting and putting that on their social media accounts. And it was like, I think like within a week, it was over.
Yeah, and here's the other thing. I think that the best opportunity for the University of Memphis to get within the power structure is looking at the ACC. Florida State, Clemson, they may want out. You may destabilize them. They're going to have to go looking for schools. But I think you could end up in a very similar situation if that happens, because that's going to be a destabilized conference that is not going to be in that, like, power of the Big 12, the SEC, and the Big 10.
Right, yeah.
So I think you could end up, even if you were able to take that step, in a similar situation that you did with the Big East into the AAC.
Well, it's just like what happened with the Big 12, right? So you land Cincinnati, you land Houston, you land all these, BYU, and then what happens? Texas leaves and goes to the SEC. Yes, they're always looking for greener pastures.
Yeah, but in the end of the day, I know the tendency with all the money moving and how annoying and all the litigation. It's like the normal consumer could give two dams about that most of the time.
That's fair.
But I would warn you, if you're out there and you feel that way, pay attention to this, because this is going to change everything altogether. How we view college athletics, what schools have it, what schools don't have it at all. It is a monumental day, I think, for the better in a lot of ways, but also for the worse for some of these schools that are not within this power structure.
Your school?
Yeah, my school in particular.
Yeah.
It's tough. Now let's go ahead and grab a break. And on the other side, I want to wrap up hour number one with my guy, Kerry Cobb. He's the founder and president of Memphis Little League. They have a very interesting coaches clinic with some MLB players coming in this weekend that I think you need to turn your eye to, but he's next.
ESPN.
Cobb is the founder and president of Memphis Little League. He's got some interesting things to drop coming up this weekend, but he joins the show now. Kerry, what's happening? How are you, man?
What's going on, Gabe? How's it going?
I'm it's going well. I need to head out that way. See you.
Yeah, we miss you at the concession stand. You brought the revenue in for us. Come on back out.
Yeah. How's season going though?
Of course, rain. This time of year, when you get started late, you run into a lot of rain. So we're basically trying to just navigate through the rain season. We're going to get it done.
Yep, I hear you. Now, I have to say, like, seeing some old, former MLB players come to town, Marquise Grissom, Luke Collier, Marvin Freeman, Lenny Webster, coming into town for some basically a coaching intensive, like a clinic, if you will. Can you shine some light on this, where people can get involved, what they can see, what they're going to learn?
Yeah, basically it's a two-day event. We've been working with them pretty much since the first of the year, and they're doing some other things with us as well outside of this. But the clinic is basically for those that have been coaching, are interested in coaching, or parents that, you know, want to get their kids involved in baseball but doesn't know the first step about it. It's a two-day event. The first day is going to be basically on-field training, which right now, because of the rain, we've moved everything indoors. And I definitely got to give a quick shout-out to Principal John Bush at Southwind for opening the doors to let us be able to work this out. So we're going to be doing basic field training on Saturday from 11 to 2, and then we come back on Sunday, and it's all classroom. So the thing about it is, and what I've been trying to stress to people, we worry so much about winning so much that we don't worry about the fundamentals of the game. And I think that's what's lacking. So I'm glad that these guys are coming in to provide their knowledge as to what is needed to really coach kids at the lower levels on what they need to do if they want to look at trying to play baseball beyond just the 11, 12-year-old age group.
Yep, so Saturday, we have it tomorrow and on Sunday for people that that missed out on that, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. both days at Southwind High School. And clear this up for me. This is baseball and softball as well, correct?
Yeah, baseball and softball. If you've never coached before, you're thinking about trying to get into it, and if you want to help our league, which we would appreciate that. But what we want to try to do, we're trying to open this up to Memphis and expand the knowledge of baseball and get kids more involved in just basketball and football. Get them involved in baseball as well and just let them decide what they want to do.
Mm-hmm, no doubt about it. Now, When it comes to like Marquise Grissom and Luke, like all these guys, how did this come to pass? You said you've been working to him. How did you come to work with him?
Well, We was introduced to them about a year ago. Just, you know, they said, I was told that they work a lot with the communities. And so we just reached out to them through a grant, first of all, because that's another big announcement. I can kind of give you a little bit of it. We received a grant for them for uniforms.
It's awesome.
But also, we have another grant that we received from them. Basically, we're redoing, if you've been to our complex, you know what those fields look like.
Mm-hmm.
So we're redoing two infields. That's going to be done to Little League regulations. Of course, we're chartered through Little League. So we're doing 60, 70 diamonds on two of our infields for this first year. And hopefully over the next 3 years, we're going to get the rest of them done to where we can host more stuff there at our complex instead of trying to travel and do other things. Because, you know, most parents in our area are not able to really travel. So we want to bring that fun and excitement and atmosphere to Will Carruthers Complex.
No doubt about it. Now, I have to ask you, how much work goes into what you do behind the scenes at Memphis Little League? And I know you're always looking for volunteers and everything else. Where can people go reach out and look for all the details on the coaching intensives and to volunteer?
The coaching intensive, you can go to our website and just sign up. It's MemphisLittleLeague.com. It takes about a minute once you click on a link to fill it out. But as far as what goes on behind the scenes, of course, we don't have the true volunteers like we would like. But when you go onto our website, there's a button up in the top right-hand corner you can click on and register. And you can sign up to be a volunteer there or just go to our Facebook page and just say, I want to volunteer. But the commitment to do what we do, because we don't get paid for this, I mean, right. It's almost at times like equal to the job that I have that I'm getting paid for. So, but when you see kids that have never played the game before, and you see them get out and they run and they're having fun, and it just makes you just say it's all worth it to be out there. Plus, not to mention, I mean, we just got a group that just graduated from Whitehaven High School that, let's see, one is going to Alcorn, two is going right. to Rust, one awesome. Is going to Alabama A&M and Xavier. So the end result is showing that we're doing the right thing. We just need more people involved. And hopefully this thing this weekend will help us out, will help people sign up for it.
Definitely love what you do. Now, let me ask you this. Our Tigers, what do you think about our Tiger football team heading in next year?
You know what? It scares me, but I'm excited at the same time because there's so much pressure on them.
Right.
But I think, you know, if you look back to some of the history of the Tigers, like this game with Florida State, you know, we always got that upset in us. So I think you get over that first hurdle. I think they can sit back and relax. I think they're going to probably put a little bit too much pressure on themselves. But if they just understand what the Tiger teams have done in the past, going and playing at USC, you know, going and beating Ole Miss, beating Tennessee, I don't think they'll have that much of an issue getting past that one big hurdle. And then you just focus on the season, getting to the playoffs, one game at a time.
Yeah, no, I'll say expectation's a good thing, but damn, it is a bad thing sometimes, too.
Yeah,
that pressure starts hitting you. But talking with Kerry Cobb, he is the founder and president of Memphis Little League. Make sure you check out this Coaches Intensive by the Player Alliance coming up on Saturday, May 25th, and Sunday, May 26th, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. At Southwind High School. Make sure you can either go scan the poster that's been put out, or go to MemphisLittleLeague.com to get involved. But, Kerry, love what you do. Appreciate it, man. Hopefully we can see each other soon.
Hey, man, come on out, Gabe. I got a spot ready for you.
Yes, sir. I hear you. Appreciate it, Kerry.
All right. Appreciate it. Thanks, man. All right, bye.
That's Kerry Cobb, founder and president of Memphis Little League. Man, love what he does.
Yeah, so tomorrow that's 11 to 2 over there at Southwind High School, right?
Yep, Southwind High School. And make
Sunday
sure
as
if
well.
You want to get involved with it, it's baseball
Terrific.
And softball.
Terrific.
And there's going to be some former MLBers.
Marquise Grissom.
I remember watching Marquise Grissom.
Was he at the Expos back in the day?
Oh, he was. He was a journeyman.
Yeah.
He was a journeyman. He played for the
Good
Giants
player.
At one point.
Yep.
For a lot of my childhood, but Marquise Grissom, Lou Collier, Marvin Freeman, Lenny Webster, just teaching you fundamentals of the game.
Solid.
It's awesome. It's awesome stuff.
Solid. Whitehaven's has some good teams, actually, they put together. He talked about it, and there's players going to the college level.
Yeah, like that payoff's got to be pretty insane.
That's got to be exciting
getting
for
kids
them.
From Memphis Little League that would have never had that opportunity getting off to college.
It's about access. We need more of it.
Getting scholarship money to go do that.
That's great.
That's great stuff. That's great stuff. He's next.
ESPN.
Cobb is the founder and president of Memphis Little League. He's got some interesting things to drop coming up this weekend, but he joins the show now. Kerry, what's happening? How are you, man?
What's going on, Gabe? How's it going?
It's going well. I need to head out that way. See you.
Yeah, we miss you at the concession stand. You brought the revenue in for us. Come on back out.
Yeah, heck yeah. How's season going though?
Of course, rain. This time of year, right. When you get started late, you run into a lot of rain. So we're basically trying to just navigate through the rain season. We're going to get it done.
Yep, I hear you. Now, I have to say, like, seeing some old, former MLB players come to town, Marquise Grissom, Luke Collier, Marvin Freeman, Lenny Webster coming into town for some basically a coaching intensive, like a clinic, if you will. Can,
right.
can you shine some light on this, where people can get involved, what they can see, what they're going to learn?
Yeah, basically it's a two-day event. We've been working with them pretty much since the first of the year, and they're doing some other things with us as well outside of this. But the clinic is basically for those that have been coaching, are interested in coaching, or parents that, you know, want to get their kids involved in baseball but doesn't know the first step about it. It's a two-day event. The first day is going to be basically on-field training, which right now, because of the rain, we've moved everything indoors. And I definitely got to give a quick shout-out to Principal John Bush at Southwind for opening the doors to let us be able to work this out. So we're going to be doing basically field training on Saturday from 11 to 2, and then we come back on Sunday, and it's all classroom. So the thing about it is, and what I've been trying to stress to people, we worry so much about winning so much that we don't worry about the fundamentals of the game, and I think that's what's lacking. So I'm glad that these guys are coming in to provide their knowledge as to what is needed to really coach kids at the lower levels on what they need to do if they want to look at trying to play baseball beyond just the 11, 12-year-old age group.
Yep, so Saturday, we have it tomorrow and on Sunday for people that that missed out on that, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. both days at Southwind High School. And clear this up for me, this is baseball and softball as well, correct?
Yeah, baseball and softball. If you've never coached before, you're thinking about trying to get into it, and if you want to help our league, which we would appreciate that, but what we want to try to do, we try to open this up to Memphis and expand the knowledge of baseball and get kids more involved in just basketball and football. Get them involved in baseball as well and just let them decide what they want to do.
Mm-hmm, no doubt about it. Now, when it comes to like Marquise Grissom and Luke, like all these guys, how did this come to pass? You said you've been working to them. How did you come to work with them?
Well, we was introduced to them about a year ago. Just, you know, they said, I was told that they work a lot with the communities. And so we just reached out to them through a grant, first of all, because that's another big announcement. I can kind of give you a little bit of it. We received a grant for them for uniforms.
It's awesome.
But also, we have another grant that we received from them. Basically, we're redoing, if you've been to our complex, you know what those fields look like.
Mm-hmm.
So we're redoing two infields. That's going to be done to Little League regulations. Of course, we're chartered through Little League, so we're doing 60-70 diamonds on two of our infields for this first year, and hopefully over the next 3 years, we're going to get the rest of them done to where we can host more stuff there at our complex instead of trying to travel and do other things, because, you know, most parents in our area are not able to really travel, so we want to bring that fun and excitement and atmosphere to Will Carruthers Complex.
No doubt about it. Now, I have to ask you, how much work goes into what you do behind the scenes at Memphis Little League? And I know you're always looking for volunteers and everything else. Where can people go reach out and look for all the details on the coaching intensives and to volunteer?
The coaching intensive, you can go to our website and just sign up. It's memphislittleleague.com. It takes about a minute once you click on a link to fill it out. But as far as what goes on behind the scenes, of course, we don't have the true volunteers like we would like. But when you go onto our website, there's a button up in the top right-hand corner you can click on and register. And you can sign up to be a volunteer there or just go to our Facebook page and just say, I want to volunteer. But the commitment to do what we do, because we don't get paid for this, I mean, right. It's almost at times like equal to the job that I have that I'm getting paid for. So, but when you see kids that have never played the game before, and you see them get out and they run and they're having fun, and it just makes you just say it's all worth it to be out there. Plus, not to mention, I mean, we just got a group that just graduated from Whitehaven High School that, let's see, one is going to Alcorn, two are going to Rust, one is going to Alabama A&M and Xavier. So the end result is showing that we're doing the right thing. We just need more people involved. And hopefully this thing this weekend will help us out, will help people sign up for it.
Definitely love what you do. Now, let me ask you this. Our Tigers, what do you think about our Tiger football team heading in next year?
You know what? It scares me, but I'm excited at the same time because there's so much pressure on them.
Right.
But I think, you know, if you look back to some of the history of the Tigers, like the first this game with Florida State, you know, we always got that upset in us. So I think you get over that first hurdle. I think they can sit back and relax. I think they're going to probably put a little bit too much pressure on themselves. But if they just understand what the Tiger teams have done in the past, going and playing at USC, you know, going and beating Ole Miss, beating Tennessee, I don't think they'll have that much of an issue getting past that one big hurdle. And then you just focus on the season, getting to the playoffs, one game at a time.
Yeah, no, I'll say expectation's a good thing, but damn, it is a bad thing sometimes, too.
Yeah,
that pressure starts hitting you. But talking with Kerry Cobb, he is the founder and president of Memphis Little League. Make sure you check out this Coaches Intensive by the Player Alliance coming up on Saturday, May 25th, and Sunday, May 26th, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. At Southwind High School. Make sure you can either go scan the poster that's been put out, or go to MemphisLittleLeague.com to get involved. But, Kerry, love what you do. Appreciate it, man. Hopefully we can see each other soon.
Hey, man, come on out, Gabe. I got a spot ready for you.
Yes, sir. I hear you. Appreciate it, Kerry.
All right. Appreciate it. Thanks, man. All right, bye.
That's Kerry Cobb, founder and president of Memphis Little League. Man, love what he does.
Yeah, so tomorrow that's 11 to 2 over there at Southwind High School, right?
Yep, Southwind High School. And make
Sunday
sure
as
if
well.
You want to get involved with it, it's baseball and softball.
Terrific.
And there's going to be some former MLBers.
Marquise Grissom.
I remember watching Marquise Grissom.
Was he at the Expos back in the day?
Oh, he was. He was a journeyman.
Yeah.
He is a journeyman. He played for the
Good
Giants
player.
At one point for a lot of my childhood, but Marquise Grissom, Lou Collier, Marvin Freeman, Lenny Webster, just teaching you fundamentals of the game.
Solid.
It's awesome. It's awesome stuff.
Solid. Whitehavens has some good teams, actually, they put together. He talked about it. And there's players going to the college level.
Yeah. Like, that payoff's got to be pretty insane.
That's got to be exciting
getting
for
kids from Memphis Little League that would have never had that opportunity getting off to college.
It's about access. We need more of it.
Getting scholarship money to go do that.
That's great.
Great stuff. That's great stuff.